Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, Wednesday. So glad you're with me this morning. It is May 30th, so a couple more days in the month, and then we're off to June, which is always in my head the official start of summer. June, July, and August. Those are the summer months as I prepare my summer reading, which is nothing. I'm just kidding. I'm going to open my Bible all summer. That's all I'm going to do. Bible, Bible, Bible. That's it. That will get me ready for, better ready for life. Because I was thinking, if you're a person who is still searching for God, and you think that God is going to be really at the top of the ladder. I remember Tim Keller saying in a sermon that he's not at the top of the ladder. He sent his son to be the ladder. So in the morning, you can't look to anything but Jesus. You know, in heaven, we have a Father who will deal with all of our imperfect fathers here. In heaven, we have a brother who will deal with all of our imperfect families. And in heaven, we will have a spouse who will deal with all of our imperfect spouses. Until we make him the one, until we say, "This time I will praise the Lord," we'll never be able to deal with the imperfection that is around us. And there is a lot of imperfection around us. Pretty much starts with when I look at myself in the mirror, I go, uh-oh, imperfection. And there's lots of it. It starts with me, and it probably starts with you, and we have a lot of work to do because there's a lot of imperfection around us, including us. So let's be praying for that this morning as we get our day started, that he's the one, he'll always be the one, and we need to make him the one. So this time I will praise the Lord, regardless of whatever circumstances you have today, just so you know. All right, the summit set for June 12th with President Trump and Kim Jong-un looks like it may happen. We don't know that for sure. Kim Long-chol, a high-ranking North Korean general, will arrive in New York today. And my guess is he could spend the first hour in the airport eating banana nut muffins at the airport Starbucks. You're saying there are more of these in the back? I always wonder about that. So we have a big show this morning. If the word change, the mere mention of that word causes you to feel uneasy, you're going to want to stick around because Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina is going to talk to us about change. We often find ourselves resisting change, don't we? Because maybe we perceive the risk or fear associated with change. There's a lot of people going through change. Every time I turn around and have a conversation with somebody, it usually involves change. They've got something going on that's pretty significant or pretty debilitating or kind of paralyzing. And their fear is kind of what I'm hearing when I talk to them. So we're going to talk to Todd about that. It is 7 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Todd Mullican. Good morning. It's 9 minutes after the hour. The word change causes a lot of people to be very uneasy. I know we don't like change. Well, we say we like change, but we don't like it. And I always think this time of the year, changes are happening all around us. We've got transitions of people going from, college into professional life. We've got job changes. We've got just seasonal changes. And when life changes start to come in and maybe we don't have the right perception about change, maybe we don't have the right understanding of how change works, all we know is we don't like it. Here to discuss that is my friend and counselor, Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. Hello, Todd.
Good morning, Bill.
Yeah, so I don't know, has anything I said made any sense yet?
Well, it did start when you looked in the mirror and saw imperfection. I'm just kidding.
Kapowie. There we go.
Geez, what a nice start. Sorry about that. No, I think you're talking about something so helpful. Just a couple of thoughts I had when you were mentioning that. So we were going to talk about was, I think the majority of people in general are wired where they prefer accuracy over innovation. They prefer a plan versus last minute change.
Okay, hang on. I'm writing this down. Accuracy. No, I really am. Accuracy over innovation.
Yeah, or creativity. You know, they prefer something to be accurate versus something that's creative. They prefer having a plan versus last-minute changes or interruptions. They prefer structure versus a lack of structure. They prefer finishing something versus starting something. You know, so the majority of us, I think, are more wired that way in general. So. Sure, there are those, you know, two or three people out of 10 where, hey, open to late-breaking information. Whatever happens in a moment, let's go with what the Holy Spirit's doing right now. And are more, you know, intuitive and more creative in their thinking processes. So I do think just in general, the majority of us are wired where we like our structure, we like our routine, we like things the way they've always been. Yeah, especially if we've been doing it for 130 years in a row, it's like, why? You know, why would I change?
Yeah.
So I do think those are just some natural tendencies people have, if that makes sense.
Okay, it does. Now, Todd, where do you think some of these might come from? Might they come from God? I mean, does he not put the sun in the sky every morning? Does he not like routine?
Right.
Are there some things that we observe in life that we go, I like routine a little bit, and maybe I learned that from him?
Oh, so true. Yeah. So I do think there's a lot of, you know, and I know myself, I'm very wired like that. I want to know what I'm doing in 2021 on a Tuesday, you know, so, but calm down, right? Our plans are not God's, right? So, but you're right. There is something beautiful about the normalcy and the predict things that we can just predict that are going to happen. So I do think for the majority of people, that's a piece of the struggle initially. But then I think it gets a little bigger where, again, as you and I maybe have talked from time to time before, just because you mentioned the word fear, and I do think that's what enters into most of us when we start thinking of change. We go into the house of fear, I call it, which has many rooms, and we go to what I call what-if thinking. So oftentimes our fears are in the apprehension of the unknown. Anxiety is the fear of the unknown. So I'm going into that new job and I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going into that, you know, that college after having a nice run in high school. I really don't. Well, what if something happens that I can't handle? Or so once we get into that house of fear, any kind of change that maybe God is leaning into us, we get scared first. And then that's when we can react by avoiding the change, wanting to micromanage the change, kind of wanting to take control of it. So I think most of it, as you said so well, Bill, comes from the fear or the apprehension of what could go wrong in this change.
Mm-hmm. Now, resistance, if we're just talking about personal behavior, there's certain resistance that we have. Maybe it's the student that's procrastinating or a person that says, you know, I'm going to quit smoking, but they still have one more cigarette, and they're saying, I'm going to have one more, and that goes on for years. Or, you know, maybe you've got just you're a boss that's kind of a workaholic, and you continually add more stuff to the plate, which just makes your life more chaotic and hectic. And yet we all say in our head, we need to change our behavior, or we need to change how we do life, but it doesn't seem to happen. Why is there so much resistance?
Yeah, boy, some of it, that's a really great point. And some of it, I think, is based on patterns of behavior, like you said so well, that we're used to, we're comfortable with, even if it might be, you know, if you will, sinful or something that hurts the heart of God or hurts our story at some level, we just get, it's still more comfortable to do that than it is to change. And again, some of those things you were talking about have strong addictive components to it. So with that, it's much easier to go underground with resisting that change or saying, well, I'll just get to that later. I know I was asked to do a talk on the causes and cures of procrastination at a faith community, and they wanted to have about 50 people there, yeah. And it was a Saturday morning from 9 to noon, and by Wednesday of that week, only 3 people had signed up, so they decided to cancel. And I said, well, why don't we wait just to see, because think of what the topic is on. And so they waited, and 43 people signed up on Friday night.
Oh, that's hilarious, Todd. That's very funny.
Yeah, so again, you're right. With procrastination, putting things off, we wait till the last minute. But most of it's the fear of not knowing what's on the other side, Bill. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that, you know, God is still for us in that change. God mm-hmm. will be there when we land at that college. It's going to be okay, but in those moments of fear, that's when we overreact and keep that behavior going that's unhealthy, or keep going in a way that's hurting us from seeing what's new in our story and what God can be doing in a fresh way.
All right, Todd, what happens when you're blindsided by change and you didn't invite it, you didn't want it, but all of a sudden it's happening to you? That's what I want to discuss when we come back from the break. Because I do talk to a lot of people that find themselves in that situation and they don't like it and they don't know quite how to process it through spiritual disciplines. So maybe you can shed some insight on that. Todd Mullican is my guest from Mullican Counseling in Edina. It is 16 minutes after the hour, so we'll be right back. It is 18 minutes after the hour. Todd Mullican is my guest on our studio line. He's from Mullican Counseling in Edina. He's an author, a psychologist, and an all-around great guy. So, Todd, if you get blindsided in life, and a lot of people do, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when something happens and comes into your world that changes things, and all of a sudden you don't know how to maybe process it through spiritual disciplines because you're so blown away. God says, don't worry about anything and let me know what it is your concerns are, and I will care for you. I'll never leave you or forsake you. Sometimes we need just to be reminded of that, huh?
Oh, boy. So true. Yeah, the blindsidedness, especially, again, for those of us that like a plan, like the structure, like predictability, like routine, even, you know, again, because I do think there are some people in this world, Bill, that are, hey, what's new? Let's try that change. Oh, okay. Let's see, you know, and again, there's other issues with those people that, you know, they might need a little bit more routine. They might need to remember what day it is and those kinds of things. So there are some things that those people struggle with too. But yeah, for the majority of us, when we're blindsided, I do think, I know for me, when that's happened in my life, initially I get so scared. I don't know what's going to happen. And again, sorry to reiterate this, but when we're afraid, just physically, we have in our body, we have a lot of dysregulation. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of restlessness in our spirit. So it does take, you know, time to, and this is why the disciplines of quiet time, the disciplines of prayer and scripture reading, you know, they do slow us down enough to help us breathe and go from the house of fear into the house of truth. Again, not, you know, over time, not overnight, but over time. So then we know, oh, yeah, even in this change that's blindsided me, I do get to pursue contentment that Paul says later in those verses you're talking about in Philippians 4. I do get to see what God's got for me here, even though I'm very frightened and I have no idea where this is going. So, God, I'm just coming to you because I'm really scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're for me. I know you love me. But right now I am overwhelmed and I'm scared.
Isn't it?
And I do think it's good to just sit in that for a little bit and recognize that that is what's going on so that I can breathe and slow down and let the Spirit of Truth come in to say, well, you know, what are our choices here? What feels like a next step that I can take in this change I've been blindsided by?
Todd, have we not had experiences before where we're so paralyzed with the fear of something, and then when we actually walk through it, we kind of look back and go, what was I so afraid about? I mean, what got a hold of me? I mean, you think of the 3-year-old on the edge of the pool, and Dad's in the water, yeah. and he's going jump, and they're just like, oh, I can't. And then all of a sudden they do it. Now they can't do it enough. And you go,
they're so
what
full of joy at
is,
that point.
Yeah. What is it about us and change that is so overwhelming?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, you know, when you're something that's, again, something that's familiar to us is much easier than something that's unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when something's familiar, we know what we've got, and we're at, okay, good, whew, that's peaceful, I've got that, I know what this is. When something is new and unfamiliar, and it's and sometimes very scary, for those of us that are wired with more of what, you know, in my field, what we call, you know, more of a slow to warm up disposition, you know, you sometimes you see children, you mentioned the 3-year-olds, you know, if you had 4 children by that pool, 2 of them would probably be frightened out of their mind to jump in. One of them would be going, let's go,
right.
to jump in.
Right.
Right. And the other one's going, eh, maybe not, you know, so you do see that with temperament, you know, right out of the womb. Some people are flexible and easy going, mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, and some people are more slow to warm up and more scared. Some people are. So I do think and that doesn't set us up for life to have those kinds of tendencies, but it just shows that. And I think that's why Jesus talks so much about worry, why he talks so much about fear, because he knows it's very common for people. And I do know, you know, the Prince of Lies, Satan likes to get in there too and wreak havoc on that and make us feel like, well, you know, you're not going to be able to handle this and, you know, see what's going on here and you're not worthy of any good change anyway. And so the lies come in, the fears come in, the lack of, you know, understanding that God is still for us in this change. And let's just see how the pool feels.
Yeah.
You know, my parents right there to hold me and God's right there to hold me in the change, just as the parents there to guide the child as they're jumping into the pool.
Yeah. Todd, might it be helpful to do a little cost-benefit analysis when it comes to change if you're in a position where you can either continue the behavior you're doing or you can move forward with behavioral change, and you can maybe do a list of pros and cons? Is that helpful?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a great idea. You know, we're learning more and more in my field that journaling, or what we call writing therapy, just mm-hmm. writing something down, it gets you out of your emotional mind into a different part of your mind that's more doing a formula, you know,
mm-hmm.
doing something that's structured. Because when we're stuck in that emotional mind, we're a little bit more vulnerable to going all over that house of fear and going to what ifs and being restless and being scared and being worried and sometimes breathing and writing down, okay, what's the truth here? Again, it gets us from those lies to what is true. Now, the truth could be, oh, my house is on fire. Well, then I need to call the fire department. But most of the time, the truth is not that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you've said. Most of the time, the pool does feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Even most of the time, as you said so well, Bill, after a really difficult change is thrown at us, oh, yeah, I can see how God worked with me through that, or I've seen what I've learned. You know, most of the time we learn mostly from our most difficult situations anyway. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's really good to slow the mind down and take a breath and write down some pros and cons and cost-benefit stuff. And some people aren't wired that way, but most people are. Even just the idea of journaling your thoughts and writing them down.
Mm-hmm.
This is God writes it down in our hearts.
Yeah. So, Todd, as we wrap up here, do you think that the big issue that most of us have is just the perception about change? That's where we really struggle the most? Because change is what it is, and we're all going to have it. We're all having it every day. And is it our perception that we need to work on?
It might be some of that, but I do think, yeah, and I do think that so ahead of time, if we are proactive with going, if we proactive a few minutes every day, know that, you know, change is something that I can be for. I want to see what God's got for me today. So if change does come, I'm a little bit more prepared in my mind. Oops, I know I'm vulnerable to go in that house of fear and get restless and want to control it or want to avoid it. So sometimes, because most of the time what happens to us with change even, Bill, is that it comes at us and then we're reacting to it. And now when we're in reaction mode, that's when all the fears get really loud and noisy.
Mm.
So I do think it's nice to restructure our perception of change. You're exactly right. And go, hey, what am I for with change? If it does happen tomorrow, if it does happen 10 years from now, let me see that God can work with me through the change as I'm jumping in the pool, and on the other side of it, going to be okay. So let me just restructure my mind through God's grace about having a new view that change is okay and change is healthy. And oftentimes change is healthy. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes we're blindsided by something that's really scary, but oftentimes working through the change is when you and I grow the most.
Yeah. Well, Todd, I'm gonna email this link to a couple of friends I've had conversations with lately, because I think it's an important conversation that we're having, and you gave some great wisdom that can be passed on. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and have a great day.
Thanks, Bill.
Yep.
You as well.
Yep.
Take care.
Todd Mullican's been my guest from Mullican Counseling in Edina, and it's 27 minutes after the hour. So let us take a little break, and then we'll do some news, and then we're going to have Ken Kaiser coming in about 10 minutes.
You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. All I want to do is praise your name. From the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God.
Good morning. It's 30 minutes after the hour, now 31. We're taking a little break for news. Ken Kaiser's already walked in studio, and he's sporting his summer tan already. I don't know how he gets so tan so fast. We will talk to him in about 6 minutes. It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. It's pretty obvious that there's often tension when a step family is created. Ron Deal has researched step family dynamics, and he says one roadblock they often encounter revolves around envy.
Jealousy is an example of fear. I mean, jealousy in a relational sense is kind of that. I'm just troubled that, you know, you spent some time with your daughter this afternoon and not with me. By the way, let me just push pause for a second. In a first marriage, when mom and dad have their kids together, if dad spends some time with his daughter, mom's usually thrilled about that. She's not jealous of that. But in a stepfamily marriage, you see how different that dynamic can be. All of a sudden, she's the stepmom. She's feeling like an outsider to what dad, her husband, is doing with his daughter. They're kind of together. They've got a history. That's him and his daughter, right? But I'm the one trying to figure out how to join that group. So there's this natural competition that's taking place. That's a very different dynamic. And what that does is she becomes jealous of his time with his daughter. She wishes she was in there with them, or he was spending time with her. We found very clearly that couples who were really struggling in blended families had five times the level of jealousy of couples who didn't. That sort of thing seeds division in a marriage.
If you want to hear that full interview from Ron Deal, you can go to myfaithradio.com and type in Ron Deal. Just the way it sounds. Take a short break, and then when we return, Dr. Ken Kaiser is with me. Be back in a minute.
Be a student of your child. It won't be easy, but do it anyway. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. Understand your children. In other words, be in tune with them. Know your children in such a way so that when it comes to disciplining them, you're not stifling their creativity and their uniqueness. It's not easy, but well worth the effort. You don't want to break the spirit. You do want to break the will of the child, but never the spirit of the child. And by all means, set boundaries, because boundaries are a way of saying, I love you. Discipline firmly, but without exasperation. Ephesians 6:4 reminds fathers, don't provoke your child to anger and frustration and discouragement. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Seek God. Ask the Holy Spirit to guide you. It's too important not to. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Them are some awfully nice bagpipes. Those belong to Kent Kaiser, his walk-up music. He's in studio right now. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
There's a lot to cover today. Where would you like to start?
Well, Starbucks was in the news, and I thought it was funny because last evening, they were all over the news yesterday, and I thought it was funny last evening because the CEO was on television saying this wasn't a PR stunt. Well, whenever you hear an official from a company say this wasn't a PR stunt, you know it was a PR stunt.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago in 2018, Starbucks did something very similar. Their stock price had fallen by about 50%. They had just announced job losses or job layoffs of about 600 jobs. And they were their brand was becoming kind of more of a commodity, like McDonald's coffee mm-hmm. or something. And so they closed all their stores under the premise that they were going to train everybody how to make the perfect espresso. Mm-hmm. And while they did do that, probably for a little bit of the day, basically what they did was they had a media bonanza for that day. It was all over the media, all over, you know, they just got, you know, millions of dollars worth of free advertising, what we call earned media, because of this closing the stores and supposedly trying to make their product better. And it worked. As you know, Starbucks is even more popular today. Back then they had something like 3,100 stores. Now they have about 4,000 or something like that. And so, or actually they had 7,100 stores back then. Now it's like 8,000 stores. And so we know that it worked. And lately their stock price has been flagging because of some of the issues, I think, some of the social issues they've had going on where they, you know, had some bad press around race and not allowing people to just sort of hang out in the stores or use the restrooms and stuff like that. So here we have them pulling out of their, you know, their arsenal of PR tactics, this mm-hmm. thing from 10 years ago that they did and said, hey, we'll do this again. And you know what? It worked. I mean, yesterday, again, Starbucks was all over the news.
Yeah.
And so they got millions of dollars of free advertising.
Yeah. Now, they said they were going to close 8,000 stores for training, which is probably referring to only stores in the Seattle area.
Yeah. They're the ones here at the mall.
Right. So they said they would have lost $12 million in revenue. But what do you think they earned in free advertising?
Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine. I mean, it's I don't know if it's calculable because,
okay.
you know, when you get a news story, you've got this credibility mm-hmm. of the newscaster, which is a lot more credible than if you just ran an advertisement. So it's not really possible. You can kind of figure out advertising equivalency based on the amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how one would go about doing that with a national story like this. It'd be pretty hard to like go and figure out like how much time did they get on ABC News, for example, and what would the ad have cost? And then you have to go right on down the line through all the local and the newspapers and the radio stations and figure out like how much it would have cost to purchase the amount of time they were in all of those places or the amount of space in the print media. I don't know how you'd even calculate that. It's got to be well over the, you know, $12 million or whatever it was mm-hmm. that they supposedly lost in sales.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you're a coffee drinker or not, Ken.
Not at all.
All right, so.
I find this stuff to be disgusting. I once had a friend at work who was like, he was addicted to it. And he said, you know, if you just let me bring you a cup of coffee each day for a week, then you'll be hooked. And I'm like, why would I even want that?
Well, Ken, you don't like coffee at all.
No, and you know, it's funny because in my family, my mom drinks coffee.
Okay.
She's a listener. She drinks coffee. The rest of my dad never did. My siblings
Kaiser.
Don't drink coffee,
like
as far as I know. So, but
your son, not so much.
To me, I can't relate to him. It just tastes awful.
I've got a cup of coffee in my hand right now.
Everybody kind of
and he's blabbering about something that I'm not even paying attention to. How are you today, Mrs. Kaiser?
It's just everybody kind of admits the stuff doesn't even taste good. It's an acquired taste.
I am
taste.
So
Why
done
would you
with
even
you,
want
Kent?
To acquire that taste?
I am so done with you right now. We got to move on to something else because my blood pressure is up right now.
I bet. Let's talk about something good, the mojo of Trumponomics.
All right,
now,
go
it's
first.
Been very interesting because you remember when we had the Trump tax cuts, like the naysayers, even a lot of people who are Republicans were saying, oh, these tax cuts are going to create greater debt and so on and so forth. And right now, the way the economy is rolling along, nobody can ever predict what the economy is going to do for the future. But currently, the rate of economic growth is predicted to be about 4%. And remember, when Trump was talking about getting the growth rate up to 3%, people are like, oh, no, no way, that can't happen. And it was only 3% that they needed in order to sort of break even on mm-hmm. those Trump tax cuts. And the way that you break even is that if the economy goes better, then you wind up with more revenue because there's more economic activity. You know, the economy grows and you wind up with more tax revenue. And right now it's looking like the tax revenues might be $3 billion when they were predicting, or $3 trillion when they were predicting that this would cause $1.35 trillion more in debt, and that looks like it's really going to be the opposite. In fact, that the debt is going to get eaten into by the fact that we're having such growth. Now, again, nobody can predict what the long term growth is going to be, but just for this current quarter, we never had this high of growth during the entire Obama administration, and here we have. Last quarter was about 3% growth, and we're predicting for the current to be, it was 2.9 last quarter, and we're looking at about 4% for this quarter. So Trump's policies toward energy, taxes, and business, cutting regulations and so on, seem to be really working. And this has got to be troubling for people who disagreed with him. And again, some of those were Republicans, but most of the people, of course, who disagreed with him on those tax cuts and many of the other regulation cutting and other policies towards especially coal and oil and so on, they've got to be a little bit worried for their own election success in the future, because Trumponomics is showing to be, you know, beneficial and really, really good for the United States.
Yeah. All right, Kent, I want to cover a topic that's pretty volatile because it's top of the news, top of the mind, but I'm going to wait and introduce that topic when we return from break. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Kent Kaiser is my guest in studio. We'll take a very short break and be right back. Team minutes till the top of the hour. Dr. Kent Kaiser is my guest in studio. All right, Kent, big headline is what happened with Roseanne Barr and the cancellation of her number one show over a tweet. Now, she profusely apologized. She said she made a mistake. It was repugnant, and she apologized, and please forgive me. And that wasn't quite enough. So her show has been canceled, and she's been, they're starting to erase her history.
Right. And I just want to kind of fast forward ahead here to, I mean, and come back to the specific tweet. But what's, I think what I'm looking at here is how the left and the media powers that be are so duplicitous here, because here they have fired her for this one tweet. I mean, she's had some crazy tweets before, too. But here they have fired her after an apology, a heartfelt apology and so on. And they haven't done the same for people of their own political ilk, and that's going to be problematic for them. Now, what's troubling to me is that they say, oh, well, her tweet was racist, and so that's worse than all these other kinds of tweets that others have put out. And I don't know. If you look at the tweets from people like Keith Olbermann and some others, you would have to say that they rise to pretty much the same level, I would say, and some of them verge on racism too, and yet those people still have jobs. And this is going to be problematic, I think. I think that in this case, ABC is actually helping to reelect President Trump, because this is the kind of thing that's just going to energize the Trump base, of which Roseanne was part. And I think that, I think that if they had the same standard, then it wouldn't be such a big deal. But this move by ABC is actually one of those things that I think is really going to motivate a lot of Trump voters to say, look, yep, there we go. Here's the left-wing media apparatus once again coming down on us little people, you know, us middle Americans. We have no voice, and they're going to have their voice again through Trump in 2020, and ABC is just stoking that fire. Now, coming back to Roseanne's tweet, yeah, it was repugnant, it was awful, and she did apologize. Now, other people have done similar, and they've kept their jobs. And so that's what's troubling, is that there's this double standard.
Yeah. So is Roseanne politically kind of to the left, but is her affection for President Trump because of his support for Israel?
It is.
As a Jewish person?
That's right. So she's Jewish, and all along she said that she couldn't stand Hillary's stance towards Israel because it's so weak, and she said that for, you know, that was immediately in the campaign when Trump was running. She was in favor of Trump because of his stand on Israel. And he has been so strong on Israel. She's been very much a supporter, and she's been right. I mean, that's the thing. She was saying before the election that Hillary would be a terrible choice because of her stance on Israel and for foreign affairs. She just said foreign affairs in general, but for nowadays, I mean, that pretty much means Israel, because most of our foreign affairs concerns are in the Middle East, and that's centered on Israel and protection of the Israeli state. And, and the left doesn't – this is the thing. There's such moral ambiguity on the left. It's so strange. Like, they can't see where Israel is superior to all of its neighbors in terms of – human rights and so on, and they want to make it an equivalency between Israel and, say, Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, the Palestinians, and so on. It's just not – there's just no comparison. I mean, if anybody goes to Israel, you can just tell when you're moving through the country where it feels like, you know, you're in a democracy and where you're not. And Israel is truly a democracy within their government. They have Muslims and they have Christians, as well as Jews, of course, who are in their government. You don't see that kind of, you know, sharing of power in any of the surrounding countries. In the Muslim countries, you would not see a Jewish person in the legislature or in the government. You would not see a Christian in the government. You'd see, in fact, in those other countries, if you're a Christian, you're at risk of being killed for your beliefs and for even trying to, you know, speak about your beliefs. So it's just a completely different moral equivalency. And Roseanne is on the right side of that. And so is Trump. And so her support for him, because it's very interesting. She, in the past, had supported Green Party, and she had supported, you know, because she supports some pretty liberal social agenda items like legalization of in marijuana and gay marriage and other different things. But when it comes to foreign affairs, he's particularly conservative.
So, Kent, when we are thinking about social media and Twitter and being a Christian, how do we use that to spread the good news and to not create division? And is there a place for Christians using Twitter?
Oh, I definitely think there's a place for Christians using Twitter. I mean, look at, I mean, there's certain ones I follow, and there's certain ones I look forward to actually their tweets. I mean, Janine Turner is a great one. She's a celebrity from Hollywood who, of course, Christian, and she has the God on the Go Minute, which I actually enjoy getting every day.
Okay.
You know, and I recommend it and because it's inspiring. But there's definitely people who aren't uplifting with Twitter. And I think even I've been guilty of not being uplifting with Twitter sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you have to apologize for saying something which is against somebody who's, you know, politically against you or whatever. And you know, you try to move on, because, I mean, we all say things in the heat of the moment, especially in an argument online. It can get out of hand. And in Roseanne's case, my understanding is that it was about – you know, it's the middle of the night when she was tweeting, and and she apparently she has had some health issues where I know that she's on some medications. I think in the past she's had some eye issues with glaucoma and things where she's been on some drugs. I mean, she's had a medical marijuana prescription because of her eye problems. I know that. And so you don't know what state exactly she was in, and but if she was in one of those sort of altered states, I mean, I think, you know, we could give her a little bit more grace, you know, especially if she's admitted that. And
well, she admitted to being on Ambien at 2 in the morning when she tweeted it. And I certainly know there's some negative side effects to Ambien. I've, you know, I know friends that have used it that have done some kind of crazy things.
Right, and it doesn't it doesn't make the tweet any less objectionable, but you have to understand, I think, and let people ask for forgiveness and give that forgiveness. In Hollywood's case, they're not doing that. In her case, this is the problem. It's like if they fired her, and whatever, and if that's going to be their policy, then that needs to extend to these other people who do these offensive tweets and or offensive other things on social media. I mean, you can think of many different things on YouTube or other areas where those people who have done offensive things that would be offensive to you or me or any conservative or Christian, those things have been given a pass. And that's what's wrong with this whole situation. It's not like, oh, they fired Roseanne. If that's what their policy is, that she did something offensive and she probably does have some kind of a decency clause in her contract, fine. But what about all these other people?
Good point. All right, one more minute, Kent, and this is something about common sense. So you tell me that Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti, how do I say that?
I don't even know.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, he is threatening to sue her former manager for violating a non-disclosure agreement she has with Stormy.
Yeah.
Okay? Yet he, of course, is representing Stormy, who is violating her non-disclosure agreement with Trump.
And that's the whole reason why the case exists, right? Yeah, I know. It's just some of these get to be just make work for lawyers.
Yeah, I think. It seems that way, doesn't it?
You know,
yeah.
They're charging hundreds of dollars an hour, and as soon as they can think of something to sue for, they do so that they can make more money. That's all that's going on here.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
And this is the last I will ever discuss of that. So rest in peace, all
this
that.
This is all I've ever discussed of it.
All right, Kent, thank you so much for coming into studio, and I will look forward to our next conversation. I don't know when and where, but I look forforward to it.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. It is 4 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
So you've announced everybody.
Thanks again to Dr. Ken Kaiser for coming into the studio. Awfully nice to have him in studio. Bill English is up next. He is already in the green room. We're looking forward to our conversation with him. And then we're going to talk to David Wheaton. And I'm looking forward to the conversation I've got planned with David. I sent him a whole bunch of notes and a whole bunch of ideas to discuss, and he returned my email with, yep, looks good. So I don't know what we're going to talk about for sure, but we've got about five or six great topics we're going to cover. So that's all ahead in hour two. We'll take a very short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.